With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Having a crappy week? Well, hang in there, because we are back with your favorite Avatar The Last Airbender rewatch podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Zach Muhammad, and as always, I'm joined by my colleague, my buddy, Jacob Redd. Jacob, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Zach. Again, getting lots of praise in the intro. I'm feeling pretty good. Maybe one of these weeks, I can start the podcast out and call you my friend.
All good, all good. If you want, you can call me your friend anytime, even when we're not.
Okay,
recording.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, yeah. So I'm here with my friend Zach, and you know what? We're done with the weather talk. The weather's finally turned to fall, and no more weather updates from Chicago.
Yeah, weather's pretty crappy in Vancouver here too, so not much to talk about there. But we got a lot to talk about. Like, not only do we have a lot of feedback, we had a Twitter poll, we have episode with Jet that was pretty jam packed. So we got a lot to dig into here, I feel like.
Yeah. I know a few weeks back, Zach, we were talking about the names of different characters in the show, and Victor wrote in to let us know that the name of Momo is Peach, which I think makes sense because, you know, Momo's always trying to go for the food. We see in this episode, Momo gets captured trying to get a little snack.
Yeah, and that's one of the, at least that's a better name than calling somebody like, hey, bye, black.
Exactly.
White. Like, I feel like that's more a unique name. It matches his character. So I like that Momo meaning Peach. That was a pretty interesting fact that Victor said.
At least we're trending in the right direction in terms of names. I also looked up, Appa. Appa means father in some languages, so I think that means that we have a daddy up there in the sky.
I did not expect to be opening up this episode talking about daddies in the sky. That's pretty funny. That's just a funny way to word that.
Yeah, that's fair. My guess is that that's not what the creators of the show intended was to think about Daddy Appa. But
you think we'll see Zaddy Appa in Bryce's Zaddy calendar?
Oh, yeah. Freak of the week for sure. For sure. I think that one's pretty funny. Also, Zach, we had some more lemur-related news.
This article that came out. So somebody, one of our listeners, I forget, if you have the tweet open, let me know, Jacob, because we can credit this Twitter user.
Paul Murphy.
Yeah, Paul Murphy tagged us in this tweet about a lemur that got stolen from the San Francisco Zoo and was found in a church playground 30 minutes away. And what were you saying in the pre-show, Jacob? You had a big Momo energy?
Yeah, this this lemur that escapes just to, or I guess gets stolen, just to be chilling in some parking lot or some playground in a church, that's a Momo energy. I would expect Momo to do the exact same thing. So pretty funny. I would be surprised, though, if we ever saw a giant air buffalo get stolen. If that news comes across my timeline, I will truly be shocked.
Really? I mean, giant air buffaloes don't exist, but I wouldn't be surprised if, like, a large animal was stolen from somewhere before. Maybe not a zoo, because zoos are almost too public. Like, how would you steal, like, an elephant or a buffalo or a large animal from a zoo in broad daylight? Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised if a large animal was stolen before. Like, I've seen crazier stuff in the news.
I just don't know where you would put them. Like, you know, I watched Tiger King like the rest of everyone at the start of this year, and I just don't know how they transport these tigers around in these giant like trailers, essentially. I would be terrified that one of the tigers would get out, and then there you go. Like, you know, you're responsible for a bunch of people getting mauled.
Yeah, you just blew my mind. I can't believe Tiger King came out this year. It feels like it's already been more than a year since I was watching Joe Exotic and Carol Baskin go at it. But yeah, I guess we should get into our Avatar talk. So today we're talking about Jet, this episode, that's the title. And yeah, this is a really good episode. I came in with high expectations because I remembered a lot of it. And even the stuff I didn't remember still met my expectations. This was a great episode, I thought. And one of the best episodes for Sokka in particular.
Yeah, I definitely think this is a great episode. Before we get too far into it, Zach, though, I do want to touch on the Twitter poll that I posted last week.
You're absolutely right. I'd wanted to touch on that as well. So in our first Twitter poll, the listeners did not agree with me. They thought Appa was more comfortable than riding in an airplane. They were wrong still, but whatever. We'll drop it. But this Twitter poll, listeners were on my side. What were the results for this one, Jacob?
Yeah, so again, wording is important when you conduct polls. So the question was, is it okay to steal from pirates? The answers were either yes, they're criminals, or no, stealing is wrong. And with 78% of the vote, we have some criminals listening to the podcast because they say it is okay to steal from pirates.
Yeah, and I was kind of surprised you were even trying to argue the opposite of that. Because, I mean, especially in the instance with Katara, they stole something that basically belonged to her, like, people, essentially. So I think she was morally justified in stealing back that scroll. And I think, in general, stealing from pirates is not morally reprehensible because, hey, they steal all their stuff, too, so...
Well, I guess you have your finger on the pulse of the listeners here. I was pretty surprised, though, that it wasn't closer, because I even tried to word this in a bit of a way that was, like, a bit biased, where, like, the yes was, like, they are criminals, but the no was, like, stealing is wrong, like, trying to put some moral spin on it, but didn't matter. Here I am being proved incorrect.
When it comes to these pirates... When they steal, like, karma's a cruel mistress, and I feel like they deserve what they do to other people to happen to them. So I was not really too shocked at the results of this Twitter poll.
Well, okay. I guess one for one. We're tied here in terms of who's just correct. Because obviously the Twitter poll is the only way to put it. But
you'll find something minute to argue about and put to another Twitter poll, I'm sure, to break this deadlock tie.
Can't wait. Let's talk about this episode. I really like this one. I think that this is a great episode that exemplifies how Avatar is able to take one character and really introduce them, give them a lot of story, give them a lot of intrigue, and make the episode really exciting. And I think that this episode with Jet is exactly that. I think they do a great job here.
Yeah, and we'll see Jet again, and Jet is one of the more fleshed out side characters besides Team Avatar and, like, everybody tangentially related to Zuko. Like, Jet is a pretty fleshed out character, and it's very interesting to see him compared to Katara and Sokka, because he's almost corrupted by his hatred of the Fire Nation, whereas Katara and Sokka are not. So they have a very interesting dynamic with those two, and I'm really excited to get into it. So do you want to just jump into the recap?
Yeah, let's jump right in. So we start and we pan down through some absolutely beautiful trees and Momo chasing a little bug. I thought this was weird because this is the winter solstice, like, a week ago, and now we're back in fall. Did that strike you as odd?
That did not, until you just mentioned it now, and you're absolutely right, that makes no sense. But I guess, honestly, in the Avatar world, seasons might be different, so I don't know. Or maybe these trees just have red leaves, but you are correct. It is kind of odd, we were just in the winter solstice a couple of episodes ago, and now we're all the... Because even later on, when we see Aang and Jet fighting in the trees, all the trees are, like, red, as if it's autumn. So that's a good observation on your part.
Well, despite the fact that we don't know what season it's in, we see Momo running around and getting caught into a sort of like a trap. It's like a snare on the ground with some berries on it that then lead Momo all the way up to be caught among the trees. A pretty clever trap here. Pretty smart.
It is a good trap, but I wonder, because Sokka in the next scene is going to say, this is a Fire Nation trap, and there's two monkeys, I guess, I don't know what, I guess they were badger monkeys or something, it was a weird portmanteau animal, but I wonder, why is the Fire Nation capturing monkeys, like, what are they doing with these?
Yeah, you know, like, maybe it's for the
slaves, like...
Maybe it's for, like, the circus that we see that Appa joins a little bit later in season 2, potentially, but my guess is, like, Maybe they're just hungry. I really don't know, because it does seem a little bit weird. Any animal that's small enough to get in the trap, or that is like wanting the berries, seems like a lot of work to capture this animal. But
yeah, and I can't imagine that Fire Nation people are struggling so much that they have to resort to eating monkeys. So I found that kind of odd.
Yeah. Well, as soon as the gang realizes that Momo's missing, they go and try to find him, and Aang is able to, completely break this trap and jump up there and, free Momo. And then we see the other monkeys. Oh, I think that these are hog monkeys.
Hog monkeys. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. You're right. That's what they were.
Aang sees these hog monkeys and wants to save them. But then Sokka says that it's going to take too much time to get Aang's way, and so cuts him down with the boomerang. How much time was this going to take? Like 15 seconds? Why is Sokka in such a rush?
I don't know why he's in such a rush, but this was honestly a very accurate boomerang toss from Sokka.
Yeah.
With one throw, he's able to slice through two ropes that are not even that close to each other. So I thought this was one of Sokka's more impressive feats, considering like in the first like 10 episodes, we just see him like basically get wrecked every time he fights anybody or does anything. So
see, I was thinking expected value, it probably takes Sokka longer, because he probably throws a boomerang and only gets one of them, and then he has to cut the other one down like using some other tool, or he has to go pick up the boomerang. Because it seems very unlikely he's able to get both of these right onto him right on time, but good for him.
Yeah, true. And I notice Aang is able to display some of his vertical we were talking about, because he's trapped like 20 feet in the air, and he just casually hops up the trees with his airbending. But then, so they get them down. They get Momo out of the trap. Sokka's able to tell that the traps are Fire Nation. And then Sokka explains to Aang and Katara that Appa's too noticeable, and that's why Zuko's been able to track them so easily these past couple of episodes. So he thinks that they should walk with Appa. He describes Appa here as like a gigantic fluffy monster with an arrow on his head, which I thought was a funny description of Appa. I don't know if he appreciates being called a monster.
I feel like that's not a terrible way to describe Appa. He's gigantic, and, Sokka's from the water tribe. He's not seen these animals before. It kind of does seem like a monster if you didn't know any better. But I think it's funny here that Sokka is able to pick up on the fact that Zuko's following him with the air buffalo flying through the sky. How does Zhao not pick this up? I know a few weeks ago Lydia wrote in to say this, but the fact that Sokka and Zuko are seeing this, like, it should be easy. I feel like the air buffalo is a dead giveaway.
Yeah, we'll see some Fire Nation people later on in this episode. I don't know, the Fire Nation, even though they're the most powerful group in the world at the moment, in season one, they're kind of incompetent. I feel like a lot of Fire Nation people we see are pretty incompetent. Even Iroh himself. Like, I love Iroh, but I feel like I can almost imagine him having lapses as a general because he's so easily distracted by these random things.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The Fire Nation is not the best at picking up on context clues, that's for sure.
Yes, so we'll continue here. Sokka is just, I think his point is good. Like, Appa is very noticeable, and I don't think it's like a hot take. But Katara is just like, oh, you think you're the boss? And she just starts going in on Sokka.
Yeah.
She just starts roasting. She's like, oh, you wouldn't be so bossy if you kissed a girl. And Sokka's like, I have kissed a girl, which he has. He kissed Suki, but Katara doesn't know about that. Continue, Jacob.
The weird part is here that Sokka says, Katara says, you wouldn't be so bossy if you kissed a girl. Sokka's response is, you don't know her. But didn't she meet Suki? Like, he could have just been like, yeah, I did kiss her and her name's Suki. And like, yeah. Got him. Like, you're wrong. But instead, he, like, makes up a lie. It's like, almost like he forgot that he kissed Suki.
Yeah, true. It's a weird thing to lie about. And it's also just funny the fact that Katara is basically just shaming Sokka for not having kissed a girl. And then Sokka's response, it's almost like those kids who don't have a girlfriend and they're in high school and they're like, yeah, I do. I got a girlfriend. You just don't know where she goes to another school. Like,
oh, man. Classic move. I love it.
Yeah, that's kind of the energy I got from Sokka here.
Yeah. I think it's also nice that Katara's like, oh, I think that Aang should be the leader because he's the Avatar. And Aang's just chilling, being extremely silly. He's in no place to lead. I really do think Sokka's the leader here.
Yeah, and then because when Katara says that, they cut to Aang and he's like hanging off Appa's horn upside down. He's like, oh yeah, I don't know if I should be the leader either.
Yeah, not a great move. Are you the leader of your friend group, Zach?
Absolutely not. But I don't think we, in any of my friend groups, we really have a consensus leader. But I'll not describe myself. I mean, I'm not really a leader or a follower. Like, I think I'm pretty autonomous myself, but I wouldn't describe myself as a leader in any group of friends necessarily. What about you, Jacob?
You know, I do feel like I'm maybe the logistical planner of the group, at least. I'm definitely, like, planning the activities, you know, trying to make sure that people know, like, oh, this is, you know, what we're going to be doing and when, like planning outings and stuff. Yeah. So maybe I'm like, more the secretary than the leader.
Yeah. Makes sense. So here in this next scene, like Sokka, I mean, I was just thinking about this. Sokka, we've been very critical of him throughout the series, but especially in early in season one, but he's completely in the right here. And Katara, honestly, all of this was unwarranted, I thought. I think she was just roasting him for essentially no reason. What do you like? What were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think it was a bit harsh. So we have Sokka say that, you know, his instincts say that they should walk. And Katara is just laying into him, like really being unrelenting. And then like, you know, Aang's getting upset that it walking is hard or whatever. And they're just teasing Sokka and making fun of him the whole time, even though Sokka has a good point. They are being tracked by the air buffalo. So yeah, like I don't really know like what their problem is.
Yeah, and Aang came across as so whiny and petulant here because he's just like, you're the Avatar. You can't walk just for a little bit carrying some supplies. He was like, I don't want to. He's like, this stinks. I hate it. It's like the first time you really see Aang just like portrayed as a whiny child.
I didn't get why they don't give all the supplies on Appa. Like, I get that they're the ones walking, but why can't they just still load up Appa and, like, put stuff on his back? Because I know, like, they make the joke. Aang's like, I'm tired of holding this. And Katara's like, well, maybe Sokka's instincts can carry it for you. But, like, I think that you have a giant air buffalo who'd be happy to carry it for you. So it seems weird they don't utilize that.
That is true. That might be an oversight on the part of the writers, because I don't understand. Because when they're walking alongside him, his saddle is virtually empty, at least from what I saw.
Right?
Yeah, no, so that's a very good point on your part. I didn't even notice that. So they walk, and then they happen to stumble on this Fire Nation group. And it's like just random, like they walk out of the bushes and Sokka's like mid-sentence, and then they just see like a group of Fire Nation soldiers who've settled down in this forest. But they're immediately saved by the episode's titular character in Jet. He shoots what like seems to be a poisonous dart at one of the Fire Nation soldiers, and then the battle commences. What do you think of Jet in this little battle with him and his freedom fighters here?
Jet is pretty badass. He's pretty cool. You know, maybe I don't agree with everything he stands for. You know, if I'm not okay stealing from pirates, I'm definitely not okay killing innocent people. But all in all, he's a cool character. You know, this is something I could never pull off. The way that he has his, like, I don't even know what you'd call them, the, like, hook things that he uses for weapons. I looked this up.
So they're hook swords, and they're primarily used, they're like a Chinese weapon, and they were used in ancient times in northern China, I think, because I was curious. And yeah, they're just called hook swords, essentially.
Gotcha. So these hook swords are so cool. I'm a big fan of them. So yeah, I totally think I would fall for Jet just like Katara does. Yeah, I'm a big fan. I think this fight's pretty cool. And the way that his group just goes in and essentially massacres everyone, you know, they use all their different types of skills. You know, you have the archer, you have the intimidating big guy, you have the hook swords, like all of these things just wrecking the people that they're fighting against. It's pretty cool. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, Jet's a very cool character because of just his design is almost just stereotypical protagonist of a show. Because I feel like Aang does not fit your stereotypical protagonist, and that's part of the reason why Avatar is so successful. But Jet, he's tall, he's got the little like piece of what would you call it? Like the grain in his mouth, essentially.
Yeah.
So he's got
looking
that
like Wendell Holland.
Yeah, exactly. He's got like the little toothpick in his mouth. He's got his dual wield hook swords. And yeah, him and his freedom fighters, they come and they just absolutely annihilate these Fire Nation soldiers. It wasn't even close. There was a couple of funny gags here. So Sokka is immediately just, he's yelling and he's about to launch an attack on a Fire Nation soldier. And then he's like, ah! And then Jet immediately just like casually kicks the Fire Nation soldier away. Sokka doesn't even get a chance to attack him. And then Pipsqueak, we'll later see that's his name, this huge man, he breaks two of these Fire Nation members' swords with a log. So he's like, essentially, like, he hits their swords with a log and then their swords are just bent. Like, how weak are these Fire Nation soldiers' swords that a log is able to just destroy their swords?
Yeah, yeah, I was looking at this and there's about 0% chance that a log could cause these types of damages to the sword, but hey, I'm not here to break that down too much. It's cool nonetheless. This ragtag group led by the brooding and handsome Jet can save me from firebenders any day.
Yeah, and then this was just one gag I want. I don't know if you noticed this because it was like in the background, but I think one of Jet's allies, I don't think it was Pipsqueak. I think it was the other dude's. His name was Sneers. He body slams one of the Fire Nation soldiers straight upwards and the Fire Nation soldier lands on a branch. I thought it was the weirdest technique. He basically tackles him straight upwards. Like he hits him with like a shoulder bump and he just lands like 20 feet above him in a branch. I just thought that was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, I totally missed that one. Did not see that. One other like little thing that I wanted to mention. So Sokka's shirt catches on fire towards the beginning of this fight. And I see that Katara does like a water whip to fix it. She takes the water from her pouch and kind of slings it back and forth. And I think that's cool. We see Katara do the water whip many times this episode as it starts to become her staple. I think that's nice to track from the episode before.
Yeah. I had that in my notes as well. She uses it later against Jet. And yep. Yeah, the water whip, it's like her go-to attack pretty much. And it's extremely useful too. Like she can do so much with it because she can whip, she can grab people with it, she can freeze people with it. Like Katara is a very formidable opponent and all she needs is just like a pouch full of water and she can do so much with it.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. So we see this ragtag group essentially body like 20 different Fire Nation people. And I have to say, you know, a few weeks ago we had the NPCs with no character. This is like a perfect side mission. Like if you're playing any type of video game, there's always that side mission where you see the really cool people and find out they're actually evil and you have to take them over. I feel like that's like a classic. And this felt just like a perfect side character mission.
Yeah, I agree, because the Freedom Fighters, like, obviously we don't really learn any of their backstories besides Jet. I mean, we learn a little bit about them later on, but they're just such unique character designs, like Longshot, Smellerbee, and like all these, the Duke and Pipsqueak, they have that gag in the next scene where he's like, hey, you think my name is funny? And then Aang's like, it's hilarious. He's like,
and then he starts laughing. Right. Yeah.
And then basically he's laughing and he just slaps Aang in the head as he's laughing. He's like, ha ha ha. And then I feel like that's such a dick move, to be honest. You're just mid laughter slapping your friends in the head. Like, I don't know.
Well, I feel like he just doesn't know his own power. It's one of those things where he's way stronger than he thinks he is. So he just tries to like pat him on the back and he ends up bodying him.
Yeah, but Aang didn't seem too pissed. Jet introduces himself and his Freedom Fighters. There's Sneers, Longshot, Smellerbee, the Duke, and Pipsqueak. And Pipsqueak is the largest of the group.
Yep. Yeah, I think, the Duke stole my title. You know, I'm a Duke of Sealand. I feel like that should be my title. I was a little offended whenever I heard this.
You guys can both be dukes. It's not that too big a deal. He's stealing your thunder a little bit.
Yeah, I was a little offended. Zach, what would your code name be in this Freedom Fighter group?
If you're the Duke, then I don't know. I'd go with like maybe Sneers. I think Sneers is just a funny name. We don't really ever mention Sneers again, but I just thought that was a hilarious name compared to everybody else.
Yeah, I feel like Sneers kind of gets, a little bit the short end of the stick here. We don't see Sneers as much as the other people and definitely not as cool as the rest. Sneers is more of like, you know, the generalist scout type, whereas these other people all have like really cool skills that they have.
Yeah, he's kind of the weak link of the group, and he probably has the most generic character design as well. Because even Pipsqueak and the Duke and Smellerbee, I feel like have pretty unique designs in comparison. Yeah. Like Smellerbee, they have that joke, I think it's in season 2, where Iroh misgenders Smellerbee and calls him a boy when they're on the refugee ship.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so then Aang and Katara are basically just in awe of Jet here. They're just absolutely, like, I guess Katara, she hasn't really seen any guys prior to, like, in their really adventure here. So there's not really any, like, love interest for Katara prior
to this. Whoa, what about, like, Haru?
Oh, I guess Haru, that's true. But Haru didn't, like, there, to me, when I watched, I know Lydia thought, like, oh, Haru and Katara had a lot of chemistry. And they do, they did. But I think Katara is, like, honestly, when you see the way she was looking at Jet, especially in that next scene when he lifts her on the rope, she's watching and stuff. Like, Katara's immediately smitten. And Sokka's struggling with this, you could tell. He doesn't love Jet as much as these guys from the get-go.
Yeah, so whenever they take over this camp, they find some blasting jelly and jelly candy. I would probably rather have the jelly candy, but I know they do have some use for the blasting jelly. But then the rest of the group is invited back to, with Jet, to then go up and see their, you know, secret hideout, their nice treehouse hideaway.
Yep. I like their hideaway. I don't know. Have you ever played the old Pokemon games, in particular Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire?
Yeah.
Because what this reminded me of is Four Tree City in that game.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of a niche reference, I guess. But that city and this hideout are both in the trees, and they have, like, these tree houses. And that was immediately what I thought of.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good call. That does ring a bell for sure. Whenever they reach the treetops, I think it's funny that Jet's like, oh, hey, Aang, do you need help up? And Aang's like, no, I'm good. And he just, like, runs on up the trees like an airbender would. I thought that was, like, a nice little funny thing that Jet's just, like, standing there and is like, okay, yeah, never seen an airbender in my life, but I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, and man, Aang is just crazy with this stuff. Like, I feel like every episode we see Aang do, like, an insane feat that nobody else can do, even casually. Like, I always think in episode 3, in the Southern Air Temple episode, when he's, like, scaling a cliff, essentially, and just the most dangerous thing he could do, and he's just chilling. Because even in this little scene, he's jumping from tree to tree, like, 40 feet in the air. I'm very impressed with Aang's athleticism. Like I said, if there was an Avatar basketball team, I think Aang's the Michael Jordan here. They're both bald. They got that going for them. And yeah, like, Aang's got GOAT potential for sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing your side of things. I think that Aang can be starting. I don't know why I had him on the bench earlier. That was a terrible idea.
No, I think that was when you first brought it up. You came around to that pretty quickly. Yeah. Like, Aang's definitely one of the star players in that hypothetical lineup.
Well, someone who we're not going to put on the team at all is Jet. He's not even getting an invite. He's not even going to get, like, a what is it, 10-day trial? What's that contract?
Yeah, 10-day contract. Good call.
Yeah, 10-day. He's not getting a 10-day contract. He's out. But right here, he does, you know, make Katara fall for him as he pulls her close and they ride up that that little rope thing. And Jet's, man, he's a stud muffin. Yeah, he is a stud.
Yeah, Jet was pretty slick, and, like, it's funny, because he actually asked Aang, he's like, oh, do you need help coming up? He's good. So as soon as Aang leaves, he's like, all right, I guess I'll just make a little move on Katara right here. And Katara's immediately smitten. Like I was saying earlier, she didn't really see any, like, yeah, she's seen Haru, but overall, there's nobody like Jet, tall, handsome, leader of this freedom fighter group. Like, I'm not really surprised she falls in, not necessarily in love with him, but she's smitten with him, I guess.
Yeah, makes sense. So am I, honestly, at this point in the episode. You know, a few minutes after this, I'll turn against him. But right now, I'm totally blinded by that brooding look he's got going on.
Yeah, so in the next scene, Jet, he tells Katara, Katara's like, oh yeah, prior to this, we've been relying on our instincts. And she gives Sokka, like, a dirty look. And then Jet's like, you'll get killed relying on your instincts doing that. And man, Sokka just can't catch a break here. We're early in the episode, and just Sokka just, he's getting roasted at every point, pretty much.
Yeah, it is. It's a brutal episode to start out for Sokka. You know, he ends up being the MVP this time, but he has to go through a lot of crap to get there.
Yeah. No, this is a really good episode for Sokka, but like you said, he just has to wade through a bunch of crap. So basically, in this scene, Jet explains to Katara that there's a nearby Earth Kingdom town that's occupied by Fire Nation, and they're trying to free it. And then Katara's like, wow, that's so brave. And then Sokka has a funny line here. He's like, nothing's braver than a guy in a treehouse. And immediately in the episode, like, I think Sokka is almost always in the right in this episode, but come on. Like, Sokka, you can't give this guy a break here. Like, Sokka, you don't know anything about him, but he is pretty brave. Like, I don't know why you're shaming him for living in the trees. Like,
yeah, it doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean, I think it's actually a little bit brave to be willing to be up in the trees. I would be kind of scared about being in the heights. Like, you know, maybe if you sleep and you like roll off your bed, you end up falling to your death. So I think it actually is brave to be up in the treetops. I think Sokka's wrong.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. I think it is brave to be in the treetops as well.
Yeah.
And then Jet explains how his freedom fighters came together, or at least a couple of them. He's like, Longshot got his house, or no, his village burned down by the Fire Nation. Duke tried to steal some food from them, and they ended up bringing him into the group. And he tells Katara the Fire Nation killed his parents when he was 8 years old. And this is something that you can tell has really affected Jet and his view of the world, because to him, every single member of the Fire Nation is evil. And what do you think of his motivations here? Like, do you think he's justified in his hatred of the Fire Nation?
I mean, I definitely get why he's upset. You know, his parents were killed by an evil group. And even if the people are not actively, you know, rebelling against the Fire Nation, it does seem like they are complicit because, you know, I feel like you do have some responsibility. But yeah, like it's really hard, especially, you know, he's a young kid. So mm-hmm. he's had to really go on it by his own. And I feel like as soon as he says that he lost his parents to the Fire Nation, then Katara is like, oh my gosh, you're like the one for me. I also lost my mom to the Fire Nation, which we know she talks about a lot. So it really is like, this is a nice way to bond Katara and Jet together. I kind of see where Jet's coming from. I don't think that you should, you know, kill people because of it. But hey, like I understand being bitter. I'd be pretty bitter too.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with almost everything everything you just said. And to add on to it, yeah, it's easy to just paint Jet as this evil, heartless monster. But if any of our parents were killed by the Fire Nation, like if I was living in their world and my parents were killed by the Fire Nation, I think it would be tough for me as well to be sympathetic to any Fire Nation member's plight. So I can see where Jet comes from. But this is also, like you were saying, it's a really good way to endear himself to Katara. Because Katara, from this point until the end of the episode, is basically like, Jet can do no wrong in her eyes. Mm-hmm. Like, everything he's doing is justified and is a means to an end.
And I think that's even more impressive for Sokka, because we know that Sokka's mom also died from the Fire Nation. But for Sokka to have that level head and realize, you know, there's a difference between lashing out and, you know, going overboard, doing things that are not okay, and ultimately, you know, like trying to fight the Fire Nation and take them down, which is what Sokka tries to do.
Yeah, and the fact that Sokka has this realization like so early in the episode, even when Aang and Katara don't believe him, I think this is Sokka's best episode that we've podcasted about, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, so then that later that day, we see Jet giving a speech to everyone. And this speech essentially is just like making fun of the Fire Nation, saying essentially like, you know, we're way better than them. This gave me lots of like indoor Star Wars vibes where they're all like celebrating after beating the Empire.
Really? Interesting. I kind of got like, have you ever watched Hook with Robin Williams?
Cause yeah,
Jet,
yeah.
I think Felipe wrote in and compared Jet and his freedom fighters to the Lost Boys. And I kind of got that vibe as well. Jet kind of does seem like a taller Rufio, which is funny because Rufio is played by Zuko's mm-hmm. voice actor, Dante Basco. Little fun trivia there.
Yeah, that is a nice connection there too. But yeah, I feel like, you know, Jet here is like really trying to rile them up, whether they're the Lost Boys or the Rebels. I definitely think that he is trying to like encourage that spirit. But then it cuts to him and there's a weird shot where it's like, maybe they're dead wrong. And the way that he says dead, like, no, you're evil. Like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, okay, you're bad.
I noticed this as well, and I think this was a really good moment of foreshadowing, because prior to this, we haven't really seen Jet do anything morally reprehensible or anything of the sort, besides, like, I don't know, maybe stealing a Fire Nation soldier to attack from Sokka. That's, like, the most evil thing he's done to this point in the episode.
Exactly,
because especially the music kind of, like, stops, and they have, like, a little dun-dun as soon as he says that, so I was like, oh, that was pretty, like, subtle, cool, subtle foreshadowing from the animators here.
Yeah, so then we also see Jet trying to get Aang and Katara help them, you know, with some sort of mission using their bending to put some water in the basin. I feel like this is very helpful that they happen to get two waterbenders. I do not know what Jet's plan was before they got the two waterbenders to flood this town. So it seems quite lucky that Jet found Katara and Aang.
Yeah, I have no idea what he would have done if he didn't have them. Maybe he would, like, because what he ends up using them for is, like, they get water out of these underground, almost like geysers, like these holes in the ground. Mm-hmm. But I guess he could use, like, the blasting jelly and just bomb the water out, but it probably would have taken much longer and been a lot more arduous process than what he's able to do with Aang and Katara. And then he also, yeah, he taps Sokka for this supposedly important mission, but this really isn't that important a mission. Like, it's just them, yeah, on lookout duty pretty much.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, whenever you're trying to make people feel included, you're like, oh, come with us to this important mission. This is like the classic cult leader tactic, you know, not that I've been in a cult or anything, but it seems like from the TV shows I've watched that whenever people are like, oh, yeah, like, you're really special, like, we really need your help. And it's like, come with me on this special mission. And then it's just like doing nothing, but it makes them feel important, makes them feel included. And maybe they they're willing to see you in a different light.
Yeah, I think Jet from the get go, he does kind of show a little bit of disdain for Sokka, because we kind of gloss over the fact that when he's giving the speech to his supporters, he like specifically mentions Aang and Katara would be great additions, yep, to their team. But he conveniently leaves out Sokka there before he does end up tapping him for this important mission, which is them just essentially in the treetops. They're just on the lookout for these Fire Nation soldiers that could randomly come across. And Sokka does something interesting here where he sticks his boomerang into a tree, and then Jet's like, oh, why are you doing that? And Sokka explains that it amplifies vibrations, which is very impressive, like a nice little tactic that he has here. I'm surprised Sokka has all these nifty tricks. I wonder who taught him all of this stuff. Maybe his dad when he was younger, because he doesn't really have any, like, it's only him. He was only man of age in the Southern Water Tribe, so I'm kind of surprised he knows all this stuff.
Yeah, this made almost no sense how he would know this, but this is very similar to how Toph looks at the ground, right? Like, she uses the ground and the vibrations in the ground to see. He's using the, boomerang to see the people down the road. I thought this was like a nice little reference to how Toph sees, but I have no idea how he would find this out. This seems like very hard to figure out yourself.
Yeah, I agree, but regardless, it's a very intelligent little trick that he's managed, yeah, to learn. And even Jet, this is like the first time in the episode Jet seems kind of impressed with anything Sokka's done, honestly.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, so Jet has such a cult of personality. Like, he's so cool. Everyone wants to like him. He's the leader of the group. And so when you get Sokka, who's not interested in him at all, I'm not surprised that Jet's kind of over him a bit, not giving him credit. But it is nice to see Sokka contribute a bit. And then whenever he sees this person, he says, like, oh, someone's coming. And he sees it's just like some old man, essentially. And this does not deter the Freedom Fighters. They descend on him. They essentially like kick him to the ground, steal all of his stuff, and they're just like taking his stuff while the old man's just begging for mercy. This is the first time we see Jet is like a little bit cruel to the people that seem pretty innocent.
Yeah, because this old man, he comes up and he says he's not a member of like the Fire Nation army. He's just a random traveler. But Jet and Kuo, they decide to accost him anyways. They basically just mug this old man. And then Jet's about to punt him in the face. I know you're not a big wrestling guy, but this is reminiscent of Randy Orton when he was a heel in the mid-2000s. He had this move where he would just punt his adversaries in the face. And yeah, he's about to do it. Sokka is able to stop him with his boomerang. He's able to like grab his foot. And he's like, what are you doing, man? Like, Jet's about to just like basically mug and beat up this old man for no reason.
Yeah, you know, I would say don't beat up old men, but we see, well, okay, actually don't, like, full stop, don't do it. But we do see earlier in the season, Haru saves an old man, and then this old man turns on him. So it's not like just because someone seems like they're, you know, pretty harmless that they're not going to end up betraying you or trying to get something over on you. So I kind of see some point of like, maybe they don't want him to go back and say like, oh, this is where they are in the trees. But I also get Sokka's point. Like, I don't think that you should just be going and beating up old men.
Yeah.
But at least I see Jet's perspective.
True. And that's a good point you bring up with that old man from the Earth Nation that ends up ratting out Haru. Because one thing I think is interesting is that Jet has this dilemma where he just assumes every single member of the Fire Nation is evil. But we'll come, like, as the series goes on, Aang and Co. will see, they'll get some Fire Nation allies. And that old man from the Earth Kingdom, he was just Earth Kingdom, but he was still pretty, like, he just basically ratted out Haru for no reason. So it's like, it doesn't really matter whether or not you're Earth Kingdom or Fire Nation. Sometimes there's just good and evil in every single nation. And I like how this episode kind of touches on that.
Yeah, Jack has a very black and white view of the world. And I feel like people who have that usually find themselves like in some sort of position that's hard to defend because, yeah, like you end up starting, you know, beating up old men. And that's not okay. You know, if you like this podcast, you officially are not allowed to beat up any old men.
Yeah. I think nobody should be bashing seniors. I agree with that completely.
There you go. That's the official Aang in there stance on beating seniors. Anyway, back to the episode. So we see that Jet and Sokka get back and Aang gets these like little popper things. So do you ever get these things that come in like the box that have like the little firecrackers?
I have not, but I think this is a pretty hilarious gag because I have this in my notes as well. So Aang throws one at Momo for no reason. Like he just chucks it directly at Momo. It explodes and Momo like reacts like a cat and he gets angry. And what Momo does is kind of smart on his part. He crawls up Aang's shoulder and like starts throwing the rocks at Aang's feet and making like Aang like dance. And Aang's like, stop. Like,
yeah.
Aang's just like complaining like a child. I thought it was pretty hilarious.
Yeah. Talk about Twinkle Toes. Momo's throwing the stuff at his feet and he's having to jump around a bunch. Aang's having to, you know, essentially jump all around to avoid these poppers. I used to have so much fun with these. I would like take them and then like I'd try to scare my sister or like I would take him to school and then get in trouble when I'd like set him off in the hallway. This was like a great part of my childhood was playing with these popper things. One time I tried to set one up as like a tripwire on my door. So that, like I tied a string to where whenever like you open the door, then one would fall. And I got it to work. It was very inconsistent. So it only worked about 50% of the time, but that was like one of my most proud moments.
Damn, you were like poppers. A little Macaulay Culkin there. You had your own little Home Alone trap set up.
Oh, exactly. No one can steal from my house because, you know, I have all these setups. My door is the 5 firebender lock. We're very well protected
here
in my
house. We know from a couple of episodes you leave your back window open, but I guess if you're just setting up traps there, then anybody who tries to crawl in your back window will be in for a rude awakening.
Exactly. There will be so many poppers at your feet you won't even know what to do. It'll be absurd.
Yeah, so we'll continue. And I feel like the writers this episode, they do a really good job of making you sympathetic for Sokka. In the past couple of episodes, we see him as a doofus, but in this episode, you really see him struggling as Jet like slowly starts to reveal the dark side of himself. Because we see in this next scene, Sokka explains that like Jet was just about to beat up this old man. But Katara comes up and she's like, oh, do you know where Jet is, Sokka? I made him this hat. What do you think of Katara's hat here?
I mean, that's one of the ugliest hats I've ever seen. It looks like it was like a piece of cloth that she just attached a bunch of like leaves to. It looked pretty ugly, but hey, I don't know Jet's style. Maybe Jet would look good in a hat.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Katara, she like sews like their clothes in episodes prior, and she's done a fine job with that, but I don't know if she's the best designer here, because yeah, I agree with you. This hat was horrible and awful. It was just
hideous. I do not think she's a fashion star, you know. I think she's probably going out pretty early if she's, you know, designing clothes in some sort of fashion
competition. She's got a good sense of fashion herself, but maybe she just knows what looks good on her and not anybody else. Because I think like when they go to the Fire Nation, I think she looks like pretty good in the Fire Nation outfit. And even her normal, like her like very iconic hairstyle with her two braids. So I think she's got a good sense of fashion herself, but yeah, this hat is hideous. And so basically, she doesn't even care about Sokka. She's just like, oh, I just want to talk to Jet. And Sokka explains to Aang and her that Jet was just about to beat up this old man, but they don't believe him. They want to hear Jet's side of the story. And man, they are really misted by Jet here, honestly. What did you think of this next scene where Jet pulls out this knife with the poison compartment?
Yeah, this is some next level lying here. I mean, this is how you can tell that Jet is like a great cult leader, is that he's like, oh, and look at this knife, which we happen to find on the body that has poison in it. I felt like kind of the knife alone would be enough to justify, like, oh, he was trying to kill me. You know, he has a giant knife. He has a hunting knife, and he's like 80.
I agree with you, but I think, and I feel like maybe you thought this too. If the Fire Nation is an all-powerful nation, like if they're the Nazi army of the Avatar: The Last Airbender universe, why would they be sending this old man as an assassin? Like, wouldn't they just send like Sparky Sparky Boom Boom Man or whatever his name is? Like, wouldn't they send somebody with actual prowess, not this old man with a knife concealed? Because you'd think, like, let's say this old man actually did have a knife on him. I think Jet would be able to, if this old man tried to stab him, Jet would be able to subdue this old man pretty easily. So I'm kind of surprised that Katara and Aang are so easily misted by Jet here.
Yeah, he would totally wreck him. If this old man comes at Jet with knife or poison, like, Jet's getting out of it. There's no chance he's going to be an assassin that's going to actually kill him. But yeah, Jet sells this lie super well. And so Sokka is like essentially saying like, no, I don't think that this is right. But yeah, Sokka, who has a close relationship with Katara and Aang, are not able to, convince Jet. Katara and Aang, and Jet's able to convince him instead.
Yeah, Katara and Aang eat this up, especially Katara, honestly. She's like, because Aang likes Jet, but you can tell Katara is like really going to bat for Jet here. And ultimately, she'll realize like what a mistake she made later on in this episode.
Yeah, so I would love to see, I would love to see Jet in the Big Brother 22 house. I feel like he would do pretty well.
That's an interesting take. Actually, well, you remind me in our post show or when we're done this, I wanted to ask you some Big Brother 22 questions. We won't do it on the podcast, but because I was listening to a couple of Big Brother podcasts, and man, this season just very interesting. So
yeah, all right, we can handle that one in the post show.
So we'll continue here. So Jet explains to Katara and Aang, the Fire Nation is planning on burning down the forest, and he needs their help to stop them. We'll later on learn that this is just a complete lie. They were not planning on burning down the forest, and Jet actually wants to land a preemptive attack on the Fire Nation and the village that they're occupying, which honestly is like, and like, it's evil, but it is a pretty smart plan on Jet's part. Like, if you remove the fact that he's killing innocent civilians, I think, like, flooding their village is, like, if I'm just looking at Jet as a military strategist, I'm like, okay, this is actually a pretty intelligent plan. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad plan. It's one way that a small group of people can take out a much larger group is, to take them by surprise and, flood most of them. It makes sense. And I think that the most impressive part of this is that Jet comes up with a really convincing lie for why they need the basin to have more water in it. He's like, oh yeah, you know, they're going to burn down the forest, so we need to put out the fires. Like, that's really smart, because it's pretty believable that the firebenders, you know, would burn down the forest. It seems exactly what they've done if we go back to the episode with the Haybai. But then, yeah, we see that, there's completely ulterior motives. I was very impressed. Somehow, Sokka overhears Jet and the rest of the freedom fighters, and he's able to follow them, where essentially Jet goes over his master plan again. And I feel like this is his major flaw, is that he talks through everything that's in the master plan, which makes it easy for Sokka to, get out of and ultimately thwart.
Yeah, I feel true. Like, and there was a funny moment right before this where Sokka refuses to go along with this plan, and his instincts tells them that they need to leave. And I feel like Katara's just like, oh yeah, your instincts, blah, blah, blah. And I feel like after being roasted for talking about his instincts earlier in the episode, you'd think Sokka would have worded this a little differently. Like, he just would have used a different term here, I feel like. Because he's in the right, but I don't know.
Yeah. So as Sokka follows them, they see all the barrels of this blasting jelly. And as Jet goes over the plan, we actually see the Duke say that he's a little bit worried for all of the random Earth Kingdom people living there. And, you know, Jet says, you know, we have to make the sacrifice. I think it's kind of nice that we have Duke caring for these people. You know, there's a little bit of dissension even within the group.
Yeah, because I think, like, honestly, I mean, besides, Jet's very just corrupted, I guess. And he actually has, like, I'm very interested when we get to him appearing again in season two. Because I feel like Jet's one of the few characters that, spoiler alert, may or may not have had an untimely demise. It's pretty ambiguous, but I'm really excited to get into that.
I think he died.
Yeah, I think he died too. And then,
okay.
And then with Pips, the Duke here, I think, yeah, they kind of just go along with Jet because, like Pipsqueak says later, they go along with him because he's a good leader. Every time they follow him and do what he says, like, nothing really goes wrong. So, yeah they kind of just blindly follow him. But at the same time, they know what they're doing is not necessarily right.
Yeah, I think it's funny whenever Pipsqueak and Smellerbee are getting Sokka, they like capture him. They call him Ponytail, which I guess it would be Sokka's nickname in their little ragtag group of fighters.
Ponytail, yeah. I don't know if that's the best nickname. Actually, kind of reminds me of the Outsiders. I don't know if you read that in school.
Oh, yeah, Ponyboy, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll continue. Jet's smooth here. He's able to lie straight through his teeth to Katara and Aang. Like, he compliments... Oh, no. First of all, they capture Sokka. The Duke and Pipsqueak, I think, lead Sokka away into the forest. And then in the next scene, Jet's really smooth. He's just lying through his teeth to Katara and Aang. He compliments both of them. He's like, oh, you guys are such good bedders, blah, blah, blah. And he gets them to, like, start to bend the water out of these underground geyser things. Because Katara's kind of like, oh, I don't know if I can do it. And he, like, puts a hand on her shoulder. It's kind of like a little flirtatious, and he's like, I believe in you, Katara.
Yeah, the other lie that Jet tells here is he says, like, you know, Sokka apologized, and he's like, oh yeah, you must have said something to change his mind. And Katara's like, oh yeah, I did do that. And that lie is super impressive, because now Katara is like, oh yeah, wanting to take credit for this lie, and is totally misted by him.
Yeah, Jet is one of the more formidable one episode antagonists, because in this episode he really displays, like, a lot of just, like, very, like, intelligent just planning with everything. You're like, yeah, Sokka will end up foiling him, and Sokka is his one blind spot. But Jet is just, like, a very formidable opponent. And honestly, I was thinking about this. Is Jet the most powerful non-bender we see in the series? Because he kind of goes mano-a-mano with Aang later on here. The only two I could think of that might be more powerful are Sokka's Swordsmaster is a non-bender, and he's part of the White Lotus crew. And Ty Lee, I think, just has a very overpowered fighting style. But those were the only two I could compare to Jet off the top of my head.
Yeah, I feel... So Suki's pretty good herself.
True. You're right. Suki's up there as well.
I feel like Suki's pretty good. And then, yeah, Ty Lee is able to, like, neutralize bending, sort of. So I feel like he's pretty good. But yeah, like,
definitely... And Ty Lee takes on the Freedom Fighters and is able to subdue them as well in season two.
Yeah.
Because then they end up dressing. And also Zuko was basically able to take on the Kyoshi Warriors. I just referred to them as Freedom Fighters.
Yeah. The last Warriors. The last person who I think deserves some credit potentially is, I actually don't know what his name is, but he's the one who's at the Northern Air Temple. He's like the crazy inventor guy. I feel like he's like a pretty powerful non-bender.
You're right. I forget his name. He's very, like, innovative. He helps them in their raid on the Fire Nation. You're right. I completely forgot about him.
Yeah. I feel like the ability to create all those weapons is probably, like, an underrated skill, because without, like, the clever use of those weapons, I feel like they would have no shot. So he more so is like a bending enhancer rather than, like, a powerful non-bender, but he's pretty impressive.
Right? Like, he created, like, a wheelchair for us. So.
Yeah.
I'm excited to get into all of that.
I just thought
that when I saw Jet, just because of everything he does. Like, he's so calculated, I feel like, with all this stuff.
Maybe we can have some sort of non-bender ranking towards the end of the series. We can rank who's the best non-bender of all. That'd be fun.
Yeah. I'd love to do that. I love always, like, in general, because I'm a big anime guy, and I always like comparing people's, just their fighting styles and, like, who'd win in a 1v1 battle. So I always like getting into that. I think we talked about a couple of episodes, like Bumi versus Toph. I thought we had a good debate there.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, cool. So yeah, that we'll add that to our agenda later. But to get back to the to get back to the episode, we see that after Jet is able to, tell Katara that, oh no, you're like a good bender, Aang is like, oh hey, what about me? Which I think is funny. Jet's like, oh, I'm sure the Avatar is a good bender, and they are able to get the water out, which is a pretty impressive feat to be able to not see the water you're bending, but still be able to, you know, pull it up from the ground.
Yeah, this is like the second time we see Aang and Katara waterbending in unison, and I feel like this is something they'll do a lot going forward. And they're just, yeah, they're very powerful because of it. The two of them waterbending can basically create like tidal waves. So
yeah.
And then, so we'll continue here. And then Sokka in the next scene, he notices these two traps and he's able to just basically sprint away from Pipsqueak and Duke, and they get captured by the traps. And then Pipsqueak's like, hey, Duke, want some of these lychee nuts?
I feel like in the Netflix adaptation, you should be the voice of Pipsqueak. It's pretty spot on.
Yeah, I don't know, guys. I guess I have a pretty deep voice naturally, and then I don't know. Pipsqueak just talks like this every time. He's just like, "Oh, hi, I'm Pipsqueak. I have a super projecty bass voice." Blah blah blah. I don't know.
That was good. Sadly, yeah. I'm not sure I have any good Avatar impressions.
Yeah, honestly, that was a good one. I'm kind of like, it sucks because I like it. Like, Rob is such a good impressionist, and I wish I had that, like, tool in my toolbox. Like, I'm not, obviously, I have the Shaq impression, but yeah. Besides that, I'm not really, like, the best impressionist myself. But yeah, maybe I can bring back Pipsqueak going forward.
Perfect.
But yeah, we'll continue. So Sokka escapes. There's not really much to glean from this scene. Like, he just gets away from Pipsqueak and Duke.
The only thing I want to say is that Pipsqueak is not about to fit into a trap that's set for a lemur. No way.
True. I mean, maybe they scaled it to his size, like from when we first see the trap, because he's squished into it, but he does kind of surprisingly fit into it, which is weird. That is a good observation on your part. I feel like you and Lydia are so good at noticing inconsistencies in the show compared to me, because every time you guys will bring up like, wait, why is like this not like this? And I'm like, I never even thought of that, but you guys are absolutely correct.
Yeah, it makes TV watching that's not for podcasting fun, because we'll just be talking about random things that are wrong in different episodes. It's a good time.
Yeah. You guys are very good with that. So Aang is able to quickly realize that Jet wants to blow up this dam and wants to destroy the builders. I'm surprised Aang was able to come to this conclusion so quickly.
Yeah, not only does he have incredible vision to be able to see the blasting jelly from so far away, but he's able to, like, as soon as he sees it, he can deduce the entire plan, which is wild.
Yeah, which is crazy, especially because prior from what we've seen earlier, Aang's kind of oblivious, and he's not the best strategist himself. Like, when he was trying to blow down the doors, and he just had the worst plan ever. So we're talking about that with Chappelle. I was very surprised he was able to sniff this plan out. And then Jet, essentially, he tries to convert Aang and Katara to his way of thinking, but they refuse.
He essentially says, that because there are a few firebenders there, that killing the whole town is okay. And Zach, I know that you and I disagreed in the past about, stealing, but I think this is clear that this is wrong. That you 100%. Cannot kill everyone just to take out one bad guy.
And it's kind of like stupid too. Like, I understand if the village was all Fire Nation, maybe I'd understand, but it's an Earth Kingdom village that's occupied by the Fire Nation. So you're basically just like killing a bunch of Earth Kingdom civilians just to kill a few Fire Nation soldiers. So while it's like an impressive plan to flood the village, I think it's kind of flawed in that regard, because you're only killing a handful of Fire Nation soldiers, and the majority of people you're going to be killing are innocent civilians. So
yeah. And like, he wants to save the village, but save it from what? Like, once you destroy it, there's nothing to save. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. But yeah, so then we have this big showdown between Jet and Aang, where essentially Aang is trying to, be the airbender that he is and being a pacifist. He's running around. He's trying to evade. And Jet is really impressively able to keep up with him as he runs through the trees.
Oh yeah, this is why I'm saying Jet might, I'm going to let you continue, but this is why I'm saying Jet might be the most powerful non-bender, because he's able to keep up with Aang here.
Yeah, I really thought that, that Aang, the airbender, would be able to get away from Jet, but it seems like Jet has some home field advantage, and he's really able to use those hook swords in clever ways to keep pursuing him.
Yeah, Jet basically is like Tarzan in these trees. Like, yeah. That's what I was, because he's going from tree to tree, and like, Aang's an airbender, so I understand Aang not being afraid of heights, but Jet's just like jumping off trees 20 feet below him, hanging on branches, because what ends up happening is Jet basically, Aang doesn't want to fight him, but Jet is able to steal Aang's glider with his hook sword, and mm-hmm. is like, you'll have to fight me now to get your glider back, essentially. And yeah, they start battling in these very colorful trees, as you mentioned earlier. So it's like they have this great battle and with this like red and orange foliage. And I thought this whole thing was amazing. It was a really cool sequence.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, essentially Aang and Jet are just running through the trees. They're, you know, trying to catch each other. Aang's just trying to get his glider back. I think Jet's trying to fight Aang. And eventually Aang, I think, gets a little bit tired of this back and forth because he sends a wind gust. Whereas before it was just like a wind blast where it's like one blast and then kind of done, which seems like it's evading. But, eventually he gets up there and he just sends like a massive wind gust that just keeps coming until Jet falls off and we see the glider fall.
I have this in my notes. It was almost like a wind, like spiral dragon. I don't know how else to describe it because mm-hmm. it was like a wind spiral that he shoots at Jet and is able to knock and like essentially incapacitate him with. Yeah, because it was a very impressive move. Because prior to this, he hits him with like a couple. He hits Jet with a couple of air blasts, but Jet just essentially like keeps on coming. So then he hits him with this final super powerful air blast.
Yeah, and that one's able to get enough distance, get the glider to fall. But even once the glider falls, Jet is still able to knock Aang back, and so Aang can't get back to the glider. But then Katara shows up, and Katara is not having any of this. If Aang was being passive, Katara is anything but. How would you describe this, Zach?
Yeah, aggressive. If we're talking about passive and aggressive, yeah, she's definitely aggressive here. Because I always think like Katara is one of the most powerful benders in the whole series. I don't think that's a hot take. And this is one of the first instances where we see her essentially in a one versus one scenario. Just go in, because what she does, and I have this in my notes, she hits Jet with like four water whips to the chest, and Jet can't even like attack essentially because it's just this barrage of water whips, and it's like she hits him with a Mortal Kombat combo, because on what would be the fifth whip, she like puts it into the ground and like freezes Jet from his feet up and freezes him to a tree. And man, so like Aang was having a back and forth with Jet, and there was no back and forth here. Katara is able to just flawless victory Jet here, essentially.
It is very one-sided. One thing that I thought was funny is with water bending, especially with ice bending, it's kind of like putting someone in timeout. Because like they can get out eventually, but they have to wait for it to melt. So in order to get free, they have to just like sit there and think about what they did, which is pretty funny for Jet's case. You know, he ended up being a little evil. So Katara puts him in timeout, puts the ice. He has to think about his actions for about an hour while that melts.
Yeah, I guess what he could do is what he ends up doing in the next scene, where he just signals Longshot with a whistle. So he has this like call that he has. It's almost like a bird call, which is essentially his signal to blow up the dam. And Katara's like teary-eyed. She's like, no, what have you done? Like, so because what he ends up doing, he signals Longshot. Longshot shoots his fire arrow. Another Legend of Zelda-esque type thing. It reminded me of the fire arrows from Ocarina of Time. But yeah, he's able to shoot this arrow. He blows up the dam, which explodes. Like, the dam explodes. The village gets flooded. And we see they have this insane shot. Because what it basically this scene implies is, like, the villagers died. Because as a viewer, if you're a first-time viewer and you watch this, they show the city getting flooded. And then they pan to a doll floating in the water. Which makes you assume, like, some child has just passed away. At least that's the assumption I got from it. So,
yeah, they definitely do want you to think that for a little bit before the big reveal that Sokka's come to save the day. But I wanted to say, just quickly, Longshot has some incredible aim. He's shooting that arrow from so far away, and I don't know how Jet found people with such good skills. Like, Longshot is incredible with the arrows, Pipsqueak's huge. The Duke and Sneer seem like some good fighters.
Yeah, even Smellerby in one of the in the fight, I'm pretty sure, just like jumps on somebody's head like Momo did at the fire stage in the battle earlier. So they're all like formidable opponents. Like
very this impressive.
Freedom Fighter group is very intimidating, and we'll see them come back. I think even Pipsqueak and Duke and Longshot will join the crew later on in the series in season three. Yep. So you'll hear this voice again.
Oh, perfect. And then did you also notice that there are cabbages in the town whenever the water comes through? I can only assume the cabbage guy had finally set up shop in this fire-bended
town. I did not notice that, so that's pretty hilarious that they have
There's a bunch of cabbages on the left side that just get destroyed by the water. And I'm a little surprised we didn't hear someone yell, "My cabbages." That would have been just the cherry on top for me.
I guess they wanted this scene to have like some sense of seriousness, especially because it's like the climax of the episode. So hearing "my cabbages" would have just like taken you out of the moment, I guess.
Yeah, for me, that actually, that's the emotional climax of any episode is when someone yells, "My cabbages." I mean, that, like, the severity at which he screams, "My cabbages," just lets me know how badly he's hurting. And honestly, I think every single movie that wants to win an Oscar needs to have a moment just like that.
Yeah, no, I think every movie could use a cabbage man. I agree with you on that point. So we'll continue here. Katara and Aang are absolutely heartbroken because they assume these villagers have all died. But Sokka comes through. He's riding on Appa, and he explains that he warned the villagers and that the old man that Jet mugged earlier actually vouched for him because the Fire Nation soldiers did not believe him. And I like the way they shot this, or that they like drew this scene, I guess, because they have this cool, like, sepia tone almost drawing of, like, it's like a flashback of Sokka in the village. And I thought this was, I very much enjoyed the way they did this.
I agree. I really liked how they did that. It's almost like instead of showing us and doing like a flashback, they just show the like storyboard of it, which is all the information we need. Like all we need is that old man speaking up and Sokka narrating. And I thought this was a really clever use of the flashback. I thought that it was it was a great part of the episode. A nice way to tie it up.
I kind of wish they did this more going forward. I don't recall seeing it ever again. Maybe they do.
Yeah, it's nice to have like a small change in the animation style in order to convey something new about the storytelling, which I thought was really interesting. I was a fan for sure. So we see that Sokka is able to foil that plan by, essentially using that old man and showing, Sokka showed that he was on that old man's side by not letting him get drop kicked in the face. And it's able to pay dividends, which is nice.
I was just going to continue. So that's what we see. Sokka is able to save the day, essentially. And we get basically in the final scene of the episode, they're flying away on Appa. And Katara's like, Katara and Aang are like, "How'd you know to go to the village instead of going to the dam?" And Sokka's like, "Oh, his instincts told him to go to the village," which is a good callback to all the instincts talk earlier in the episode, especially with Katara. She was just straight up roasting him for the whole episode, bringing up his instincts.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a nice callback to the instincts. It's a sweet moment. But really, his instincts can't get him basic navigation. Like, the sun is still setting, so you should be able to tell which way is north and which way is south. But hey, I guess his instincts go like 1 for 2 that day. 50% is not too bad.
True. And also him steering Appa, I feel like this is a first. I feel like we don't, at least prior to this, we haven't really seen Sokka steering Appa. I feel like we've only really seen Aang do it. And I think Sokka does steer Appa more going forward, but most of the time it's Aang who's chilling on Appa's head with the reins.
Yeah, he also says yip yip pretty passive aggressively as he leaves Jet, which I thought was funny. You know, earlier in the series, he didn't know the word for it. And here he is getting it right the first time and heading off into the distance.
Yeah, so overall, I guess that's the end of this episode. I thought this was a great episode. I went in with high expectations because I think this is one of the standout episodes of season 1 that most people bring up as one of the better episodes of this season. And yeah, it was really good. It held up and I thoroughly enjoyed it. What about you, Jake?
No, I think that this was a really good episode. We have a really interesting character, Jet, who, he's able to, you're able to understand where he's coming from without like giving too much time to him. I feel like in many other shows, he would be like a 2 or 3 episode arc of being evil. Where like, you know, the first episode, they're totally snowed by him. The second episode, they like start to see, and the third episode, it's like the big culmination. But with Avatar, you get that all packaged in a nice 20-minute bit. I feel like you don't even lose out on the character development either. So I think it's very impressive to have that character join the Avatar lore, make such a big impact, and then head off. That's pretty good.
I agree with all of that. And also, to add on to what you were just saying, I think Avatar as a whole, one thing I'm noticing, especially as we're podcasting about it, Avatar is really good pacing. And in like such a short amount of time, they're always able to give you so much information. I felt this way, especially in Imprisoned, when we were talking about Haru, because that whole thing, I felt like this episode and that episode, they were able to just pack in so much stuff. And they were able to flesh out these characters in just a single episode. Like you said, in any other series, Jet would have a multi-episode arc. But in this, we're able to get so, like, basically almost like a full arc just in one episode. And the cool thing about Jet is that he's just one of these characters where you can completely see where he's coming from, and he's the first character that we see where that's actually just so corrupted by his hatred of the Fire Nation. Like, it's honestly surprising we don't see more characters like this, because the Fire Nation, we'll see them, they do a very like so much evil throughout the series. So
We see Katara a little bit in season 3 almost be corrupted by her hatred. And it's interesting to see that here. You know, she empathizes with Jet so much. And I feel like we really see the struggle that Katara has between doing what she knows is right and feeling the sadness from losing her mom. I feel like this is a great character, and it really does help move Sokka's character along and Katara's character along. We get a lot of learning about who Sokka is, who Katara is, from seeing them juxtaposed to Jet, who's kind of like gone off the deep end. It's almost like Jet would be what Katara was if she never met Aang and didn't get the hope, and instead just decided revenge was the best way instead of trying to restore this hope.
Yeah, and like I was saying earlier, honestly, you can't even blame like Sokka and Jet for, and Katara, all these people, if they wanted revenge, because these people killed your parents. Like, that's tough. Like, I know we can say, like, oh, we've never killed civilians and stuff, but when somebody kills your parents, like, all gloves are off, essentially. So, I'm not saying I would kill anybody, but I can, okay, I'm just saying, I can sympathize with Jet and see where he's coming from. And that's part of the reason why he's such a great character, because you know what he's doing is wrong, but you also know why he's doing it. And he's one of the best singular episode antagonists we see throughout the whole series.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is good. And I think the listeners liked it as well. So maybe, Zach, we can jump into a little bit of listener feedback.
Yeah, we got a lot of feedback, and we do get a decent amount of feedback overall. And I just want to say thank you guys so much for being so positive in all your feedback. I was telling Jacob in the pre-show, last episode, I was like, I don't know if we did that good a job. And then I look at the feedback, and everyone's so positive. Not one person had anything negative to say. I'm like, wow, I got shocked by how kind you guys were, which I really appreciated. So thanks to everybody who keeps sending in feedback. And yeah, even when we don't respond, we definitely read all the feedback, both me and Jacob.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a big fan. I really do appreciate it. We're up to 26 ratings on Aang in there on our post-show recap feed. Keep smashing that thing 5 stars. Let's get us up to a million.
From 25 to a million.
Well, 26. 26 to a million.
Oh, 26 to a million. I think I can do it. 1 week. Yeah. Let's get that 999
exactly.
Whatever we need.
Exactly. But anyway, if you have any feedback, definitely write into avatar@postshowrecaps.com. Tweet at us @postshowrecaps, or find either of us on Twitter, and we'll be happy to incorporate your feedback. Sarah wrote in, and she said, hi guys, loving the podcast. In honor of the Jet episode, since I think it's pretty clear that Jet is bad girl hot, I want to know, Zach and Jacob, are you good girl or bad girl hot?
Yeah, and this is weird. I don't know why she didn't refer to Jet as like good boy hot or bad boy hot, I guess, because I thought it was kind of funny. Like, Jet's a male, yet we're referring to good girl hot or bad girl hot, which is kind of hilarious. But
I think this is a Cosmo Quizzes reference to the Renap episode.
That's what I thought with Leon. And I guess for me, I wouldn't describe myself as either of these things, really. In fact, I wouldn't even call myself like super hot. But if I had to choose one, I'd probably go with, I guess, good girl hot. I don't really have any bad like girl qualities about me. What about you, Jacob? You call yourself a firebender. Do you see yourself as bad girl hot?
So I'm definitely a firebender. But I'm neither bad nor hot. I would say I'm good girl cute. Good girl, good cute, girl, or cute. Good girl, decent. That would be my descriptor.
Good girl, decent. I guess I'd also give myself that description, but.
All right. So there you go, Zach. You and I were both good girl, decent. Yeah, no, I'm definitely.
That's a cop-out answer. I'm sorry, Sarah, if that's not what you were looking for. I think Jacob and me, if we're just being honest with ourselves, we can't describe ourselves as like, I'm bad girl hot. Like, we'd just be like lying, essentially. So.
Yeah. I wish I was more bad girl hot, but I'm not there yet. Maybe by the end of this podcast I'll be closer, but yeah, I'm not seeing it yet.
And then before I guess I could have saved this for our next segment, but I really want to get into this because Laura Graves, she sent in an email and she was saying that what we should name our Fantastic Four sub segment, Quattrobendier, or whatever we call it, is the T Quartet. And I really like her reasoning for this. This is what she says. As Uncle Iroh has discovered in his life, T is a perfect example of the four elements working together. You have leaves from the earth, water to steep it in, fire to boil that water, and air to cool its temperature. And I never thought of this, but it's true. Like, the act of making tea essentially encompasses all bending elements. And I think, yeah, going forward with our segment, I think the name we should go with is the T Quartet. What do you think, Jacob?
I think this is a good name. Yeah, I think it is a great reference to the Avatar and, you know, building in one of my favorite characters, Uncle Iroh, into that. But I've had so much fun changing the name of the segment. I definitely, I think that this is a great idea. We can call it the T-Quartet. But if anyone else wants to change the segment just for the week, then you know what? Keep writing in. I think it's so funny that we keep changing it. But T-Quartet is a good name. So let's go with that for now.
Yep. And then I guess last but not least, we can get it to Lydia's feedback as always.
Yeah. So Lydia wrote in and she said she quoted Jet where he says the best part is the Fire Nation can't find us. And she said, what's going to happen when all the leaves fall? Jet is so full of it. So, yeah. What do you think is going to happen when the leaves fall in a bit and you just see a bunch of tree houses with no leaves around?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe they're like high enough up where, and there's like enough, I guess, branches and stuff where like you wouldn't see them unless you look directly upwards. But yeah, no, see, this is what I mean about you and Lydia are so every week Lydia will come with like an inconsistency that I would have never noticed. And I'm like, that's a really good point. Cause I read her feedback here and I was like, that's so true. In wintertime, if the leaves do fall, then yeah, like there's a high possibility that their treehouse will be visible. I guess they would just have to set up camp on the ground somewhere else during winter.
Yeah, my other thought is, like, unless the firebenders are using that air balloon where they're able to, like, you know, see what's above, it's going to be pretty hard to see up in those branches. And if the branches are strong enough to support Appa sleeping, which we did see Appa sleeping in one of the branches, I do think that they're going to be able to, you know, maybe hide. Maybe they have, like, different decorations or, like, whatever. Maybe they can, like, you know, hide their stuff a little bit more. But yeah, it is like, it does seem like they are going to get caught as soon as the leaves fall. She also wrote in to ask, what percent of Jet's crew do you think ended up in his crew because they got caught in his traps? Do you think Jet is kidnapping people to join his crew?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe like when the Duke was stealing food, that's how he just ended up caught in a trap.
Exactly.
Even later, when we see, like, I think it's Pipsqueak and the Duke, they just get caught in these traps so easily, honestly. Like, Sokka runs past them, and then they just, like, run directly on top of the traps. And you'd think, like, is Jet the only person setting these traps? Because you'd think they'd, like, know how it looks like and know where all the traps are.
Yeah, well, apparently they might have gotten caught in these traps again, and that's why they're there. I would like to think that, you know, Jet wants to go on expert mode. Like, obviously he could catch people in traps, but I think it'd be more fun for him if he convinced them to join his group instead. So I'm going to say just the Duke was caught in the traps, and the rest he could have caught, but instead he turned on his wily charm and decided to convince him instead.
Yeah, and we've saw Jet throughout this episode just charm pretty much everybody sans Sokka. So, yeah, I agree with that. Well, I guess Sokka and the old man who he mugs and beats up.
Yeah, doesn't do a good job there. Yeah.
I guess Jet ain't charming any Fire Nation members anytime soon.
True that.
So, yeah, we also want to get into our... Oh, no, continue.
We also had Felipe who asked about the Lost Boys. He said, why did these Lost Boys never get to the safety that was Peter Pan's crew, and what happened in Neverland? So, yeah, I do think that Felipe made a good point. These Lost Boys are very similar to these freedom fighters are very similar to the Lost Boys. So yeah, yes, what do you think went wrong in these people's lives that they don't find a Peter Pan?
I mean, who would be Peter Pan besides Aang, right? Aang's the only person who kind of I could see as like a Peter Pan. He doesn't have a Tinkerbell, but he could fly. And yeah, unfortunately, these freedom fighters, instead of running into Aang, like Katara and Sokka happened upon, they instead run into Jet, who sadly kind of like, I mean, he leads them well, but he also ends up leading them astray to the point where they're all willingly about to just murder some civilians.
What a big swing. You know, you could be following the Avatar and instead you're following this murderous cult leader.
Yeah, true.
It's a big swing. Anyway, yeah, so that's it for listener feedback. Thank you so much for writing in. We're about to get into our episode rankings, where you also can write in a score between 0 and 4 cabbages. We'll take my score, Zach's score, and the listener score, average them up to get the official Aang in there score. Zach, what did you think about this episode?
Yeah, I like this episode a lot. I don't think it really has any, like, flaws, necessarily. I think all of the fights were kind of, especially the first fight, we'll get into that, it was kind of, like, one-sided, but seeing Jet and them through his trees was cool, so I'm pretty high on this episode. I'm going to give it a 3.7 out of 4.
A 3.7. Wow, very nice. Yeah. I definitely think this is one of the better episodes. Yeah, I think that a lot of the past episodes, we've had, you know, some decent characters. We have the pirates who are like kind of fun, one episode antagonists. But here, Jet has so much character development. And I really do like how in Avatar, we have this one episode to really explore Jet. I feel like we understand him. We get his motivations. We had lots of goofs or funny little gags. And I think it's so fun to have like all of these things come into the episode. And this really does culminate for why I like Avatar so much. So I'm right there with you at a 3.7, Zach. Listeners.
Wow, same score.
Yeah. The listeners are a little bit lower than us, not by much. They're at a 3.46. Not bad.
Pretty good though. Yeah. That's still a good episode. And yeah, I think this is one of, especially because when I see people rate episodes of season one, we've mentioned how The Great Divide is one of the more panned episodes, which we're going to get into pretty soon.
Next week.
But Jed is always considered, like, every time I see best episodes of season one, it always comes up. And it's a great episode. Like, because I think the fighting and like Jed as a character is amazing, but also like every gag kind of lands. I feel like every little joke they had, all the humor, pipsqueak, talking like this is just so funny. Him and his lychee nuts just had me cracking up at all times. So I thoroughly enjoyed this episode, and
I think this is one of the better episodes of season one for sure. This averages out to a 3.62, which is now our second highest episode, with Imprisoned barely squeaking it out at a 3.73. I feel like properly rated here. I think that this is a great episode. Imprisoned is really nice because we see Katara really step up and grow a lot, and we get the Warden and Haru. But yeah,
this episode we see Sokka like growing up a lot. So I feel like that. I think that's part of the reason why Imprisoned and this episode are our two highest episodes, because they do such a good job seeing the growth. We see the growth of these two characters. And
I agree. I think this is a really good episode. So I'm glad to be podcasting about this one with you, Zach. The last thing, or not the penultimate, I think is the right word for it. Penultimate segment that we have is the Battle of the Battle Rankings. As a reminder, it's the same sort of stuff as the episode ranking, 0 to 4 cabbages. And there you go. So we will break down. I think there are two fights this episode. Do you agree with me, Zach?
Yes, I do agree with you.
So the first one's going to be Jet and his gang destroy some firebenders. What are your thoughts on this one?
I'll give it a 2.3. I thought there were some funny moments, but overall, I don't know. I mean, seeing Jet with his hook swords for the first time was really cool. But like I always say, for me, the one thing I want from these battles is for it to be kind of close. Whenever it's just them wiping the floor with like NPC Fire Nation soldiers, I'm just never that invested. So I feel like maybe some people might be higher on this than I was. But yeah, I was not necessarily that high on it. What about yourself?
Yeah, I have this one at a 2.8, which is about like a 70%. I think it's exactly passing. It's really nice to see Jet enter this way. We get introductions to each of the freedom fighters, but ultimately it's pretty much one-sided. You know, one side dominates the other one, and before you know it, they've you know, beaten up all 20, broken their swords in weird ways, and all the rest. So yeah, that leaves this fight at a 2.55. And the next fight is the one between Aang and Jet in the trees, where Katara ends that one pretty quickly. This one I was not as high on. I think it's nice. Yeah, I think that it's nice to have the Katara segment at the end, but it's a lot of jumping around through the trees and like acrobatics. I don't think I'm like much more down on this one, but I'm at a 2.6. What about you, Zach?
No, I was way higher on this one. I gave it a 3.1. I thought it was like, I like seeing Jet kind of traverse through the trees like Tarzan, like him. Cause like you said, the way he uses his hook swords throughout the whole episode is very interesting, but especially in him, in this fight, him using the hook swords, like swing from branch to branch. And I was just very impressed with the fact that he was able to keep up with Aang. And I also, like you said, I really enjoyed Katara at the end when seeing her use her water bending as like just an offensive weapon for the first time in a long time. Like,
yeah, I think that you make good points. I felt like this one kind of goes on for a little bit too long. I didn't have a ton that I liked out of it, but
that's fair. That's fair.
It's a fine one. That leaves that battle at a 2.85. And the last thing we have to get to is our T quartet. We're going to take four things, break them down into what bending types they would be. And we had to do a little bit of a switch up this time. It's my bad on scheduling. We were supposed to have great podcaster Amon Adwin on. I believe next week we will have him instead. So we will do four characters from Glee that week. But Zach and I had to do a little bit of an emergency T quartet this week.
Yeah, so we were bouncing ideas off each other when we ended up landing on, because I feel like we've kind of done every obvious quartet. We did the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, we did the Fantastic Four, we did the Incredibles. Mm-hmm. So we kind of, this one, we thought outside the box and we decided to do, what would you call them? So I guess video game companies or like video game consoles is what we ended up doing. Yep. Like companies essentially. So we're going to do Nintendo, Xbox, PlayStation, and PC.
So, yeah.
I guess we can start with PC because that's the one we had the consensus on. And I think PC are definitely firebenders. Like all these PC Master Race people, they look up down upon the Xbox users and any console user, really. All these people, they're like, oh, you have a PC or you have a PS4? Why not just get a PC? It's better in every way. They're always quick to bring up why it's superior. So I think they're easily firebenders in this instance. What say you, Jacob?
Totally agree. I think the people on PC are the firebenders. They also are ready to rage. I know any person who plays lots of video games can get upset, but I feel like you see those meltdowns where the PC gamer loses and freaks out like a firebender. I think the next easiest one is Nintendo. I think Nintendo doesn't really care as much about this whole argument as the other ones do. And I think for that reason, it's the airbender. You know, they're off doing their own stuff with Mario and Pokemon and Zelda. They're so different from the rest of the group. I think that they have to be the airbender.
Yeah, and they're also so, like, innovative in comparison to everybody else. They're so unique. And if we look at Aang is really the only airbender we see in the Avatar: The Last Airbender. And the cool thing about him is just his fighting style compared to everybody else is just so out there and unique. I feel the same about Nintendo. Like, they're the only one of these groups that actually takes risk. Like, when they went from the GameCube, which didn't sell well, to the Nintendo Wii, which is like looked like a completely different console. Like, you compare that to the GameCube, they have almost nothing in common, and yet because they were so innovative, that ended up being a breakout sell.
The last two that we have are Xbox and PlayStation. I think these are a bit harder. I'm not really sold on either one. I have Xbox as the earthbender. I was thinking a little bit about the exclusive games they have. I know they have Halo and Gears of War and Forza. I feel like those are all like kind of like, I don't know, practical games.
This is off topic, but are you a PS4 guy or an Xbox guy? Are you a
PS4 gamer, yeah. Jacob?
PS4. I had a PS4 too. I never really played much on it except like 2K, and like I recently played the Yakuza game series, which was really good. But for me, I've never been much of a gamer, so I'm not too passionate about console war. So like, while I've never had an Xbox, I'm also not like, oh, Xbox sucks. But you see, like, even PS4 users versus Xbox users, they have like this blood feud, which has always surprised me.
Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of the PS4, and I think like the part of the reason why it's a waterbender is I think it's a versatile console. It's a Blu-ray player. I think that the exclusives are better. Maybe I'm just showing my bias.
I agree with you. I think it has better because I think Xbox consoles always have like better specs, but then their exclusives are so bad that people just prefer PS4.
Yeah,
I think that's always the issue. And yep. I agree with you. I have PS4 as my waterbender as well. You're gonna love my logic here. My reasoning is that the PS4 home screen is just blue and wavy. And it's reminded me of waterbending. Like, you know, when you turn on your PS4, like that little screen, I'm 99% sure that's like a blue screen.
And then, it is.
Because compared to PC and Nintendo, which are pretty unique in their own right, like Xbox and PlayStation are relatively similar. Like, honestly, it's tough. You could slot either one into earth or waterbending, and I wouldn't be too angry. But yeah. I had the exact same. I think this is unlike last week, we're in sync, because I had PlayStation as my waterbender and Xbox as my earthbender as well.
Yeah. I also think with Xbox being better spec'd, it's like very practical, but the PlayStation's more versatile, and that fits in with Xbox being earth and PlayStation being water. So as a brief recap of our T quartet, we have Nintendo as the airbender, PC as the firebender, Xbox earth, PlayStation water. And this one was an easy one. I didn't have to do much research. Typically I like to look stuff up beforehand, but because I'm bad at scheduling, and we're having Amon on next week.
No need to beat yourself up. It's all good. I think, honestly, even without a guest, I think this was one of our best podcasts yet. Not to toot my own horn, but I think this was a good episode. Like, I thought this was a lot of fun.
Hopefully people didn't just turn it off as soon as we started talking about video games. They're like, we did not come here for this content.
True. I kind of like, you were actually talking about it in the context of bending, and I kind of led you on a little tangent just because I was curious.
No worries. But there you go.
That's all for us. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. Pipsqueak here. I'm going to go munch on some lychee nuts, and I hope you come back for next week's episode. Jacob, do you know what episode we're talking about next week?
Oh, yes. The legendary Great Divide episode, universally lauded as the worst episode of season one.
I heard one from, so I did a little bit more research about this on the Reddit because somebody posted about it on the Avatar Last Airbender subreddit, and apparently it's actually not that bad an episode, so I'm excited to talk about it. But why it's panned is because it just got played so much on TV, so a lot of people just got tired of it.
Yeah, you need literally zero context about the entire series in order to understand what's happening, and it has no impact on the rest of the series. So really, you could completely forget about this episode, and you'd be totally fine, but I think that's why people didn't like it and why it was played so many times on Nickelodeon. But hey, I think we'll have a great time podcasting about it. Zach, if anyone wants to leave feedback, where can they find you?
You find me at ZachMuhammad32 on Twitter. And what about you, Jacob?
You can find me at JK Redman. You can also write in to avatar@poshorecaps.com, tweet at us at @poshorecaps. And as always, you can smash the Avatar The Last Airbender, hang in there, podcast feed, give that thing 5 stars, smash subscribe.
Like I said at the top of the show, thanks a lot for all the positive feedback. We really appreciate it. Honestly, when me and Jacob started this, I feel like both of us kind of had reservations. It's like, will people even want to listen to us like nerd out about Avatar? Or at least maybe I'm speaking for Jacob, but that's kind of what I thought. But the response has been overwhelmingly positive. And yeah, I really appreciate all the people who listen.
Yeah. So thanks to all you guys. We found some great people to join Team Avatar Podcasting, and I'm glad people have joined the journey with us. It means a lot.
Yeah. So I guess that's all for us. Thanks a lot. We'll be back next week, as always. And that's it for me. See ya. Bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.